Hi, and welcome back to Conversations with Chrissy. I'm really excited to talk about the Maryland Department of Transportation new complete street policy, and that discusses really important issues that we've talked about before in terms of safety and accessibility with our transportation system. Really excited to have Candice Holfer joining us for this month's episode. She is a director of MDOT's Active Transportation and Micromobility Office. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Chrissy.
Can you tell me a little bit about what that office does and then how your journey brought you to MDOT?
Sure. Well, maybe I'll start with how I got here. I, by training, am an urban planner. I also have a background in multicultural studies. So I think the combination of that experience and education kind of led me to transportation planning and eventually to the secretary's office. But I spent the first couple of years with MDOT at State Highway Administration. There, I got to work on a lot of Vision Zero efforts, and that really brought me closer to traffic safety as a cause for what I do in urban planning. So now at Maryland Department of Transportation, at the Secretary's office, I get an opportunity to work with all modes, not just State Highway, and we can impact the traffic safety decisions that are being made and the policies that are being considered from a higher level.
That's great, and such interesting background and bringing together, you know, inclusiveness and thinking about cultural impact and then our safety goals, obviously, that we have as a state. And certainly Governor Moore has promoted. So let's talk right about the complete street policy. Tell our listeners a little bit what it's about and why it was so important to update the policy.
Sure. Well, complete streets isn't new. It's something that, at least in the United States, has been around since probably the 1970s. It's probably when we'll find the earliest complete streets policy, probably under a different title or name. But since then, you know, and we know that complete streets as a philosophy dates back even further across the ocean. And so historically, it's something that we're catching up to in the States. So complete streets as a policy in Maryland is really emphasizing all users on our roadway and prioritizing safety for each user. In Maryland, we have a policy that was issued in 2012 by the State Highway Administration, and that was applicable to the Maryland Aviation Administration and the Maryland Transit Administration as well. But with only capturing MTA, MAA, and SHA functions of roadways, we were missing out on some of the other critical modes and their commitments to safety. It was getting really difficult to speak with one voice when we're saying we are prioritizing safety. So this policy has all modes signed on to this commitment, and it's really focused on limiting the exceptions to the rule. We're making complete streets the default approach and making that the rule, and really trying to streamline the way that we evaluate waivers, making sure that that's funneled all the way up through the secretary's office so that we get a chance to really provide transparency to the public, but also do our due diligence when evaluating how we accommodate all users.
No, that's great. And I think, you know, some of our listeners might not know the fact that MDOT is multimodal, and it really, in this case, is a great benefit because it's about breaking down those barriers, essentially, and making sure all modes are following the same principles with safety at the core.
Right. Exactly. And you know a lot about that, Chrissy, in your role. I think the great thing about this policy is we get a chance to include Motor Vehicle Administration, which is one of our modes and really has a critical role when it comes to Vision Zero. So it was really important to have them as a part of the conversation and at the decision making table.
Well, it's great to take this next step forward. As you say, it's not new, but it's our next step forward in our safety journey. And I wonder if you could talk about some of the specific things that will be outcomes of having that complete streets policy in terms of what the modes will do and maybe some action steps that will follow from there.
Yeah, sure. Well, we've got a lot on our plate. We're moving pretty aggressively as well. We've carved out about 6 months to work together with all the modes at MDOT, but also externally with our partners and our stakeholders to define how we're going to implement this policy. After that 6 months, we're going to hold everyone's feet to the fire, and we will be on the hook for implementation and making sure that all our projects that have not yet hit that 30% design milestone are going back to the drawing board and making sure that they're hitting all those key elements in the policy. One of those is public engagement, for example. We want to make sure that we are addressing those underrepresented communities and thinking about innovative ways to connect with them. Another element of the policy is just partnering and communication internally and externally, making sure we're sharing information. You know, the Motor Vehicle Administration houses a lot of good data, and they're known for really working hard to make sure that that's available to the public over the last couple of years. But we can do a better job of making sure that internally our offices are sharing that information too. And I think this policy helps to drive that.
And it's such an important time because I know we've talked about the fact that, you know, our fatality numbers last year, highest since 2007. I know we all agree it's unacceptable. And so this is a great way to kind of address that. And I love how you talk about projects. So this is something everybody listening, as they see new projects in their community, they'll see a difference in community engagement, but also in looking at access for pedestrians and bicyclists and our vulnerable roadway users.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, mentioning speaking of vulnerable roadway users, one way that we can really make a concerted effort to evaluate how our improvements are performing is to assign crash modification factors to our countermeasures. So crash modification factor is, you know, say a percentage or a way that we can evaluate the impact to crash rates that a countermeasure or a combination of countermeasures may have on a roadway. So imagine you assign, say, 0.8 to a sidewalk. And that means that if you implement a sidewalk adjacent a particular roadway, say a roadway that is a level of traffic stress 4, which is pretty high, perhaps you have a chance of making the amount of crashes reduced by 20% because of that crash modification of 0.8. It means that instead of 100% of those expected crashes, you're now going to have 80% of those crashes. So being able to identify, adopt, and assign crash modification factors and working together with the MVA and the SHA will really help us estimate the, you know, impact that our projects are going to have on our communities.
So I know we talk a lot about vulnerable roadway users, and we have a very active bicyclist community, and we want to make sure they're safe, whether they're on roadways, whether they're on trails. Obviously, as drivers, we have to look out for them, but I wonder if there are new things coming for them as well.
Oh, definitely. And one great thing about trails is that, you know, another term that we use in our industry for that is shared use paths. They're multi-use, right? So they serve pedestrians and bicyclists. And because of that, sometimes they traverse more urbanized areas. And so we might think that a trail is kind of off-road or natural surface, and oftentimes it is. But a lot of times we have paved trails that cross state highways, and we need to think about the crossings there. Mm-hmm. So one venue where we can do that is by updating our statewide trail plan. And that's something that'll be coming later this year. We'll be kicking it off. And that'll be, you know, a 12 to 18 month effort led by our office in conjunction with a couple of other state agencies. So we'll be creating sort of a trails team to get this trail plan updated. I think it's been around since 2009, and we've completed some of the projects, but there are new needs that need to be, you know, documented, identified, and prioritized. So looking forward to updating that trail plan in the coming months.
Yeah, one of the interesting terminologies I know sometimes we use, but I'm not sure if the public is familiar, is micromobility. We have all these new vehicles out there, right? Different variations of what we traditionally think of. So I wonder if you could touch on that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because a lot of times we think, oh, technology, what does that mean for cars, for vehicles? And we're definitely seeing a lot there. And a lot of it is making it, you know, a little bit more challenging for our vulnerable road users. But there are smaller low-powered electric devices that are being used for short trips. And a lot of them are being used by transit riders, not just pedestrians. Sometimes you can make connections if you're a cyclist and, you know, need just a quick trip and So those are great options for folks making short trips. And that's what we're encouraging in the way that we build out our communities, that they're walkable, that there are services nearby, accessible and convenient. And a lot of times using e-bikes or e-scooters are way more convenient. So we're looking forward to establishing some programs to learn a little bit more about shared mobility and what those programs are looking like in our municipalities, the examples that they've kind of set out, and see what we can do as a state to help complement and advance those efforts.
That's great. And as you said, it continues to develop. I was actually asked by about an electric unicycle the other day. So you never know what we're going to see as the new mode of transportation.
I'm telling you, technology is moving so quickly.
It's exciting. It really is. Mm-hmm. But you talked about transit a little bit, and I wonder if we can delve into that a little bit more, because they are part of our network, mm-hmm. and yet, you know, they traverse between our roadways as their sidewalks and then on to whatever mode of transit they might be taking. I wonder how that fits in with the complete streets and how we consider that.
Yeah, no, great question. One thing we were able to do with the updated complete streets policy is gather up all the latest and greatest best practice documentation that we had and make sure that we're kind of streamlining for everyone where we want them to go for reference material. So the policy now takes the context guide, but also MTA's bus stop design guide, which uses a lot of complete streets policies or practices that we see in areas like Baltimore City, and really progressive ideas. We've united those within our policy to make them key reference points for our practitioners. So really looking forward to adding transit to that mix when we're talking about complete streets, right? How people are alighting, how they are waiting on the sides of the road, you know, is it convenient? Is it safe? I have a lot of experience in that growing up in Maryland and using transit primarily in high school to get to and from practice, to and from school, home. So I find that to be a really critical component when we're talking about complete streets.
And I think the message is really, we want everybody, regardless of their mode of transportation, to be safe at the mm-hmm. end of the day. And for some people who are dependent on transit, it's so important that we're providing that service an efficient, clean, and safe way.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things also I think that is exciting is we do these enhancements to communities all the time. You know, we improve a roadway or we add sidewalks, but what do we do from an education perspective? So I love that you talk about that community engagement piece. Yeah. We assume people know how to navigate, you know, a new signal or a new intersection, but sometimes we need a little more education out there. So I know you and I have talked about that, going back into the community after the work is done and really making sure the community understands how to engage with that new technology.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about one of our programs under our Model Complete Streets Initiative, which allows us to work with the local jurisdictions in tandem to develop concepts to understand the issues. And we do have an opportunity to not only bring Maryland Highway Safety Office in after the fact, but also at the beginning of the project. Mm-hmm. We can start to talk about what are those issues that are known in the area, say distracted driving, you know, in a particular community. I listened to a police chief talk about just known driver behaviors that the community is aware of. And we want to make sure that if MVA has a subject matter expert that is studying this, that they're at the table, you know, and they are they're validating these concerns and helping State Highway to develop solutions.
Yeah, great partnership, as you talked about the policy, cutting across those modal lines to make sure we're doing the right thing for our residents. I think that's another good point. You talked about partnership. So local jurisdictions, others who will be involved in the complete street policy?
Yeah, we're really looking forward to expanding mm-hmm. our training opportunities to local jurisdictions, municipalities, metropolitan planning organizations, developers, and our community members, our users. We want to make sure everybody knows what this means to them specifically. So we'll be rolling out some trainings over the next few months as a part of developing our implementation plan, but also implementing in 2025.
Now, that sounds great. So it really will impact the entire transportation industry if we think about it. I know we talked a lot about SHA and our roadways, but even, you know, have planes flying overhead here at TSO headquarters, but yes. Even MAA will be impacted as well, right? And the other modes like MPA and really is meant to be a complete representation of a 1MDOT approach.
Yeah, everyone has a responsibility in some regard at MDOT, and we just need to figure out what exactly that is. Our implementation plan, one thing that it does is assign responsibilities, assign roles, something that we can do together and document and update as things change, as processes evolve. So we're really looking forward to having that implementation guidance complement the policy in the next 6 months.
That's great. The real action steps that come after the adoption are always important. What would you want the public, somebody who's listening, obviously interested in safety, likely if they're listening to this podcast, but what would you want them to take from the conversation? What do you want them to know and how can they be engaged?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about how the average roadway user will be impacted by this is, you know, we have a discrete policy point in there related to speed and SHA's role in managing that, MVA's role. But there is a distinct role that users have and really a lot of agency when it comes to controlling speeds. So I think with this policy, we expect that the public will be able to read it and through training opportunities provided by MDOT, be able to understand it and apply it to their daily activities. So one thing we can do with speeds is just try to be more attentive, try to be more present, slow down, you know, move over. We have this saying at MDOT, be the driver, put yourself in those shoes. And when we say slow down, it doesn't just apply to drivers. You know, sometimes we get caught up in the pace of our day and we're moving quickly as we're walking and looking at our phones or taking phone calls, crossing the street.
Distracted while we're walking.
Yeah. Distracted driving is, there's such thing as distracted walking too. So if we're all doing our part to just slow down, take a minute, be present and alert, I think we can really start to impact those specific crashes that are related to speed. And as we know, you know, about 16% of the fatalities over the last 5 years have been speed related in Maryland. So, you know, if we want to try to modify our performance indicators, we can probably take a more targeted approach by looking at crash types and seeing what we can do to address them with those types of countermeasures.
No, that's great. I think we always talk about it starts with each individual, right? Getting to Vision Zero starts with the individual action we take every time we get in the car, whether we do buckle up, whether we are going too fast, are distracted, are impaired. These are all factors each of us can control. I think sometimes when we see the numbers, it's overwhelming and we think, how do we get those numbers down? And so I like to turn that around and say, how can each of us make a difference? Because collectively then that creates the change that we're really looking for.
So the six principles of the safe system approach are: death and serious injuries are unacceptable, humans make mistakes, humans are vulnerable, responsibility is shared, safety is proactive, and redundancy is crucial. So if we go into our project development processes with this in mind, and that's every stakeholder, we can get ourselves out of that loop of being in the blame game and start to just make some changes.
That's right. It takes a community. It's not one person. It's not one entity that can make the change we need happen. You know, we need our law enforcement partners too. We need our emergency medical system. We hope that they don't have to come to a scene, but they're an important part as well. And then obviously the proactive piece as we think about both engineering and education. It takes everybody. It takes a whole community to make the change we want.
Yep.
So you have some personal experience that, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love if you talk about, because here you're doing this very important work to help move the state forward from safety, but none of us is immune to a potential crash that could really change things in just a blink of an eye.
Yeah, one thing that I think about a lot when it comes to, you know, our responsibility and everybody on the road, and having been in a crash that was involving a drunk driver and speed in poor conditions, poor weather conditions, I experienced a little bit of post-crash anxiety looking at the crash scene. And that really got me thinking about, you know, some of the work that you and SHA have kind of done to lead us down the road of work zone safety and make some strides there. I was really thinking about all of my colleagues at MDOT that showed up to help me, our county, you know, fire and EMS officials. I was thinking about their safety. you know, as they were attending to me and the other victims that were involved. It was a four car crash scene, and it was at dusk, so starting to get dark, and it was raining. Mm-hmm. So I was just really worried that we were in the left lane on 495, and speeds were pretty high, and people were on foot managing, you know, crash victims. Mm-hmm. So we all have to really just be attentive. I'm so thankful for the legislation that a lot of my colleagues have worked really hard on to pass and remind people how important it is to make sure that our workers get home safely too. So I made it home safely that night. The drunk driver that hit me, he went to jail. Mm-hmm. But now that really got me thinking about the way that we are coding some of these crashes and how our EMS are treating crash victims. You know, are they encouraging folks to go to the hospital? Mm-hmm. Or is there a barrier related to paperwork that makes it easier for our EMS professionals to kind of recommend that they go the next day? Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that I'm always thinking about now. And, you know, mm-hmm. is our data really accurate, right? Because if we don't even have the coding to make sure that we are documenting it correctly, how trustworthy is our data? Mm-hmm. I know that that's something that your team works really hard on. And my goal with the policy was to make sure that your team starts talking to some of the teams that I've worked on at MDOT to share that really important information and the efforts that we have ongoing.
Yeah, and so grateful that you made it out okay from that crash. But seeing it firsthand does put that different perspective on it. And you're right, it's difficult in that crash scene. I know as we talk to EMS, you know, severity of injury is something that's incredibly difficult because sometimes folks may have injuries that are externally visible and they look very serious, but internal injuries can sometimes be more serious. And so that coding that happens initially is not always the most accurate. And how do we ensure that that follow-up information happens and it happens timely so we're making good decisions? Mm-hmm. But really glad you also referenced our work zone safety with Lieutenant Governor really taking the lead in that. The idea was we create a culture of safety, you know, a culture of being courteous to each other. We've lost that courtesy, I think, out on the roads. Mm-hmm. We're all in such a hurry. And mm-hmm. I think your story is a perfect example how, you know, does it matter if we get there a little faster or in the end of the day, something like that happens, it puts it in perspective for everybody.
Yeah. So it really was a wake up call for me.
I'm sure. Are there other things about Complete Streets that you want to make sure that everybody knows and is aware of? I think this is a great first step. And as we move forward, certainly I'm sure there'll be additional updates that we can provide our listeners.
Yeah. I mean, one question that I get asked that I actually love to answer is what do I think is the most important aspect of Complete Streets? Some people ask it, you know, what's the most important policy point in your policy? Like I said, Complete Streets isn't a new approach and different states kind of take a different lens when they're implementing it. But for us, I feel like public engagement is going to be the biggest impact that we can have for the long term. If we're talking short term, I think controlling our driver behavior, controlling the way that we walk, bike, the behaviors that we take and following the rules of the road, I think that can help help us manage our speed related crashes. And that's something that we can consider sort of low hanging fruit to address in the near term. But long term, we need to figure out what are those gaps out there, not just in the network, but in our outreach. Who are those communities that are missing? And let's start to be honest about who's not showing up and think creatively about how to get to them or how to understand the issues. One thing that the Moore Miller administration tries to do, in my experience, just by observation, is bringing in people to the administration that are a part of the communities that they're serving, that have perspectives and experiences that coincide or overlap with a lot of our underrepresented communities as well. So I really applaud them for bringing people like that. I consider myself a Marylander, a lifelong Maryland resident. And, you know, I have an experience that I think a lot of folks can relate to. So I applaud them for bringing those types of people to the table when it comes to decision making.
No, I definitely agree. And one of the great things about our Work Zone Safety Working Group is we had highway workers as part of it. We had those law enforcement officers who were on the roadside, you know, during those responsive events. And so we need to hear directly from folks who are most directly impacted. And it's the voices that we don't hear. I always say that wind up being the things that come and we realize later on we didn't take the right things into consideration.
I think that was such an exemplary component of the way that you were able to get that bill passed, is that work group. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Secretary Weidefel really wants us to think more along the lines of, is that creative outreach, that interactive two-way street when it comes to asking for feedback or providing education. How can we make those more engaging? So kudos to you all.
No, thank you. Definitely a team effort, and really proud of the whole community coming together to make a change. So lots of good safety legislations this year, including NOAA's law. So you mm-hmm. talked about the driver struck you being impaired. So hopefully going forward, that person will get the help they need to modify their behavior and never do that to anybody again.
Yeah, I'm tracking it closely.
Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think really important information to get out to the public. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us again. I want to encourage all of you to be safe on the roadways, to think about our other roadway users out there. Be that driver who helps save lives on Maryland roads. Thank you, and be safe.